Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels, the Blake Radio Network on Rainbow Soul. I'm telling you, tonight's topic is a doozy. I have to start with a serious disclaimer. I am not a lawyer, so I can't tell you what to do or not do. And while I did train as a doctor and practiced as a doctor for 10 years, I am not licensed. Anything you hear is absolutely not medical advice, although I will quote some medical sources. But tonight it is really a powerful, powerful show. And of course, you can call in for questions at 914-338-0695. We have a very nice chat room going, moderated by Rick. And the chat room is healingwithdrdaniel.chatangle.com. Okay, well. Today's topic is who owns your SH blank blank? Yes. We're on a network radio show that gets censorship. Now, I could use the word feces, and I would use that to sort of synonymous with that. However, the word SH has so many meanings. And for tonight's show, we really need to just be aware of the richness of this word and all of the meanings and tell you it's a real revelation. So what prompted this? What prompted this show is the FDA wants to regulate your SH as a drug. Therefore, under their jurisdiction to regulate what you do and don't do with this. Now you might say, oh yeah, I always knew my SH was pretty good. But it goes further than that. If your SH is a drug that the FDA can regulate, that means it's scheduled, and that means that you are in possession of it without a prescription. This is illegal possession of a drug. Yeah. You can be locked up just because you have your own SH. And so I just had to do a show on it. I thought that was going a bit far to the FDA to step in and regulate your SH. Now, as many of you know, I am outside the United States, and so I still own my SH. But you guys, you don't own it anymore. This is beyond. So I'm going to start at really the beginning, my beginning, in terms of my awareness of SH. I'm going to use that SH for the rest of the show. I'm not going to say the whole word because respect the censors. So my first awareness, as you might imagine, is around age 3 or 4. And my understanding was that SH was something we flushed down the toilet. And that's pretty much the size of it, cut and dry. Didn't have a lot of value, no use in holding on to it. That's what I knew, and that was that. But as many of you also know, I grew up in the inner city. And that word kind of went around a lot. People would use all these expressions like, man, don't mess with my SH. That's my SH. I'm like, what? If it's SH, what do you care? Just look go with it, you know. And people talk about drugs. I'm like, man, this is some good SH. And so I was like, this is a confusing word because I know that SH is worthless and undesirable, and you should avoid it at all costs. And if you get it on your shoes or your hands, you need to wash it off. But there's this curious value and attachment people had to it. And I never did, really get it. Of course, until recently, when the FDA decided they wanted to regulate it, I was like, whoa, you got my attention. And this stuff sells on the internet for $2,400. And doctors are selling your SH for $2,400. I just said, no, for an ounce, and not even an ounce. An ounce is 31 grams. This is an amount of 20 grams. So the value of your SH now exceeds that of the value of gold. So pay attention, listen up. You could be sitting on a $1 million jackpot, I'm telling you. So where did all this, how did we get here? Well, first of all, so that was my awareness of SH. Then as things progressed, nothing really budged much, so I got to medical school. Medical school, they further maligned the substance by saying that most serious infections are spread by people touching their own SH and not washing their hands before they ate. Oh my God, just what I thought. Woo, that SH is so bad stuff. So then antibiotics came around, and as antibiotics showed up, people started getting ulcerative colitis, vancomycin-resistant enterococcus, methicillin-resistant staph. So all of these infections came about because of exposure to antibiotics. People were dying, like dead. 2012, 49,000 people died from methicillin-resistant staph. The numbers for pseudomembranous enterocolitis were 15,000. Now in 2014, if I start counting, it's 25,000 people dead. I mean, this is serious. This is a lot of deaths from people infected with organisms that are resistant to antibiotics. So then, I said, this is not good. And it turns out the cure for these deadly diseases is to eat more or less an ounce of somebody's SH. Yeah. And I'll talk to you later about how to pick this special somebody. And so the price of SH went through the roof. And a whole lot of dislocation started happening. But I'm getting ahead of myself. What I want to impress on you is that your health is determined, I would say, totally by what you do with your SH. This is serious. This is not a trivial matter. So you need to pay closer attention to what you do with your SH. Now, what are the things you could do with your SH? You could flush it, and most of us are aware of that. We flush it. But did you know you could use your SH as fertilizer for the food that you eat? Yes, you can. And this was done very widely in Japan, parts of Europe, and even parts of the United States. And in the United Atlas, they still collect people's poo. It's called the honey bucket. So the honey bowl comes by and sets it in the bucket and their poo, so it doesn't contaminate the lake. So you can use it as fertilizer. Now, when you take your poo, your SH, and you put it on a crop, fertilizing the crop, you're basically taking the nutrients that the plant gave you that you did not use, and you're returning them to that plant along with your body's special processing mechanism, whatever your body did to that stuff to make it into food. And you're feeding it back to the plant. This gives you stronger plants and more nutritious plants. People have been lied to, and I've glossed over this. I've not addressed it for sensitivity reasons, but I'll address it right now. The reason our soils are depleted of nutrients is because we do not return our poo to the soil for fertilization. That is it. It has nothing to do with monocrops. It has nothing to do with erosion. It has nothing to do with any of that stuff. It has everything to do with the fact that people's poo is not returned to the soil to nourish the crops of the following year. That cycle is broken. So fertilizer is no use for your poo. That use is, to my mind, expressly prohibited. Somewhere in the mid-90s, I got this book written by Jenkins. And it's a book about using your poo to fertilize your backyard garden. And so I read this book. I said, hey, that's pretty neat. So I went right to work. I started taking my poo and putting it in my compost pile of compost. It did not take long. Well, it took about, I would say, a month for them to catch up with me. Well, every rat from every gutter came to my backyard because it was a free meal. And so my neighbors would just be like, Dr. Davis, you don't know what you're doing, but you ought to stop. This is the city. You can't do these things. Then the health department came by. Then the extension agent came by and gave me a brochure on how to compost properly. And after a few visits, I got the message, and they were very kind and nice. They did not fine me or incarcerate me or further make a mountain out of a SH plant. So fertilizer. And we are expressly prohibited from using it as fertilizer. Or you could compost it. I tried that, as I mentioned to you. We're not allowed to compost our own poo. And, of course, you could eat it. You could eat it. Now, there are a lot of expressions about eating SH, and I won't go into all those. However, should you be one of the unlucky people who is suffering from an antibiotic-resistant infection that threatens to kill you, the good news is if you eat poo, you will recover. 90% effective. That's if the doctors do it and charge you several thousand dollars to feed you the poo of a relative. 90% effectiveness. Of course, if you do this yourself without supervision or assistance, your success rate is 94%. Right. You could have guessed that, right? Say, doctor, I knew that. I knew that. All right. So, of course, over time, you know, cities sprung up like in Europe, and they had this open sewer system. They still have that many across the world. And we know, of course, that open sewer systems, of course, spread disease somehow. We won't go into that, but open sewers are not a good idea. But we do know that composting with SH, you just can't get anywhere with that. So basically, we've got gold here, serious gold. You know, you've heard of white gold, you've heard of yellow gold, you've heard of black gold, but guess not. Now there's brown gold. Yep. And I'm going to give you some important information today, and definitely I thank you so much for listening to this whole show before I take that next flush of the gold, because you may want to handle it a little bit differently. Now, we all have talked about things like freedom and government intervention or whatever. But I mean, if you're not even free to decide how you're going to relate to your own SH, then one could make a pretty good argument that not only are you not free, but you don't even own your body. But that's okay. So let's see where this takes us. If your SH can be sold for $2,400 an ounce, more than the price of gold, then it seems to me there is no reason for anyone to be poor. Are you kidding? Just blank. I mean, you're rich. So, and people are selling their poo, believe it or not. And the price, and you can sell it by the ounce because it's only 20 grams is needed in an ounce, like I said, instead of 1 gram. And so simply having control over your SH could remove, eradicate poverty and eradicate a fair amount of illness. Now, every single death due to an antibiotic-resistant infection is a doctor-caused death. It is homicide. And so you can prevent over 100,000 homicides, or at least be a part of that movement. I mean, wouldn't that make you feel good and say nothing to having a few extra $1,000 in your pocket? So what the FDA wants to do is stop you from mining the gold that issues from your own body. Prohibit you from selling your gold, your personal gold mine, for $2,400 an ounce. Or worse, giving it away and interfering with commerce. That's the real problem. The real problem is if you give your poo away, and I think most of you listeners, if a friend approached you and said, look, I am dying, I'm having 30 bowels a day, I'm in such kind of agony, doctors can't help me. But I know if you would give me 1 ounce of your SH, it could save my life. A lot of you would probably give it to them for free. I'm just guessing, And some of you might want to charge money for that thing. Okay, all right, I got you. That's no problem. But even if you charge them $1,000, $2,000, what's a life worth? I'm sure your friend will gladly pay you. All I'm saying is we have here an opportunity for friendship, kindness, love, and healing with or without commerce. In other words, many of you would just give this stuff away, and that's okay. But it's not okay with the FDA. Let's take a look and see what's going on. So the FDA decided it has jurisdiction over your poo. And the FDA has decided it's going to regulate. Let's take a look and see what's going on and what are the doctors saying? What are the doctors weighing on this, you know? I don't know why you guys think doctors are bad people, but they're not really. They've got an opinion on this. So what's going on? You mentioned gold is selling for $1,200 an ounce. That's right. Gold cannot hold a candle to the value of your poo or your FH. And this is Dr. Kelly, who performs fecal transplants for patients who are suffering from recurrent Clostridium difficile. And if you read the medical literature, there are even doctors saying, excuse me, this is an iatrogenic disease. This is a deadly disease, and C. difficile, the death rate is pretty high, 80 to 90%. People who get it, who get symptoms of it, die. I mean, it's very serious. And here we have the opportunity to save at least a good 90% of them, and the FDA is saying, whoa, not so fast. Wait a minute. Okay, so what's Dr. Kelly doing? Kelly is doing fecal transplant. But in order for Dr. Kelly to help you eat your friend's SH to save your life, you have to have had this disease at least 3 times and fail antibiotic therapy. And fail at least 1 dose of the antibiotic vancomycin, which by the way causes death. And patients who have experienced 2 or more severe episodes of C. diff that commit the infection. In other words, have to be admitted to an intensive care unit. That's what serious is. A lot of us would think it's serious if we just had our interruption to our day. But Dr. Kelly says you have to be admitted to an intensive care unit. Then you would be a candidate. She's not performing fecal transplants for irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, ulcerative colitis, or Crohn's, or other conditions outside of C. diff. What's going on? Well, unlike me, Dr. Kelly is very attentive to keeping her license. I made the mistake of indiscriminately helping whoever I could help. Dr. Kelly is a little more cautious. Dr. Kelly realizes she cannot interfere with commerce. So Dr. Kelly is basically saying, only after the system has built you for close to $100,000 and destroyed your health, will Dr. Kelly offer you her assistance. And this is the pressure that doctors are under. And Dr. Kelly further will not perform fecal transplant on patients who are not at her hospital, and she will not accept transfers from other hospitals. So in other words, if patients find out about her on the internet or however they might find out, she is not going to snatch income or revenue from the jaws of another hospital or institution. Doctors do make money on these infections, but the lion's share of the bucks are made by the hospital when these people end up in the intensive care unit. And so what Dr. Kelly is saying, she will not prevent you from going to the intensive care unit 3 times. But after that, she'll help me. Step in and help. And so Dr. Kelly's hospital bills, of course, are short. Now, you might say, of course the FDA should regulate people's consumption of FH, because, well, it's dangerous. Guess what? To date, there have not been any documented cases of infection transmitted through fecal transplant. Yes, not one case of infection transmitted through fecal transplant. And not all those fecal transplants, believe me, were tested, evaluated, or whatever. So we have here a therapy that essentially has no no downside. And so this is what the medical people are saying. They're saying to date, there have been no documented cases of infection transferred through fecal transplant. That being said, you'll hear Dr. Stay's uncle. Even though I said one thing, I'm going to contradict it. So that being said, features are hard bodily fluid, and proper donor screening and testing is essential. Well, it can't possibly be essential to test anything if no diseases have been transferred. Nevertheless, they're recommending at least $500 worth of testing. That would be tested for AIDS, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and syphilis. Now, you mean the lampposts rightly know that syphilis is destroyed by the stomach acid. It's not that easily a organism. But whatever. So they're also asked to submit, so the stool has to be tested for bad bacteria, like salmonella, for parasites, and for C. difficile. And patients are asked to sign a consent form acknowledging the risk of undergoing a colonoscopy. So there's risk of undergoing a colonoscopy as well as theoretical risk related to the fecal transplant itself. So the risks associated with fecal transplant are theoretical. The risks associated with undergoing a colonoscopy are real. Are you getting this? So the method of getting this other person's feces into your body, colonoscopy, is where the risk lies. Now, I don't even tell you how to do this yourself, not that you want to, but how to do it yourself. So you can state the risk of the colonoscopy, and you don't need to sign consent forms. You can just have a chat with yourself and even consent. So the risks of fecal transplant are theoretical. A synonym for theoretical would be imaginary. Okay, so we have an imaginary risk, and the FDA wants to jump right in here and handle this imaginary risk. All right. So, Centers for Disease Control, October 4th, 2013, Science Daily that publishes fecal transplant pill knocks out recurrent C. difficile infection. The key here is recurrent. So the good old boys, those people who keep their medical licenses, have agreed not to treat this infection until and unless it recurs, until and unless more expensive, more lucrative interventions have failed. All these interventions are proven to be less effective than consuming FH. So, how big a problem is this? This is 2013. And so in 2013, the landmark report of antibiotic resistance, C. diff, sickens 500,000 Americans and kills 14,000 every year. And what they found is when they took the feces and put it in a triple capsule, it means a capsule inside of a capsule, inside of a capsule, gelatin capsule, and purified so that only bacteria remained in the bacterial concentrate, the cure rate was 100%. So when a person swallowed this capsule, they had a cure rate of 100%. When they submitted to a colonoscopy, those of you who had your annual scan, you signed a consent form, you know, perforation, anesthetic complications, people submitted to all that, only got a 90% cure rate. Okay, 100% do-it-yourself at home cure rate, and 90% let the doctor do it, and pay thousands of dollars cure rate. So, you're probably wondering, who should your donor be? You can't just take anybody's FH, right? Oh, no. You got to get to yourself. So the best donor, get this. This really floored me. The best donor is someone who is in good health, who has not taken any antibiotics for at least 90 days. No antibiotics for at least 90 days. I mean, how incriminating is that? These illnesses, these devastating, deadly illnesses are caused solely by use of antibiotics. Now the propaganda, if you turn on your 6 o'clock news, if you listen to the radio, which I don't do, but if you do, they will tell you it is the inappropriate use of antibiotics. That's wrong. It's wrong. It's only false. It is the use of antibiotics. The use of antibiotics. Whether they're justified or not, the use of antibiotics, for whatever reason, is what causes these deadly resistant infections. It has nothing to do with washing your hands or not washing your hands. It has nothing to do with wearing gloves or not wearing gloves. It has nothing to do with a mask or a gown or isolation. And that's why wear the mask, look, but my isolation has not reduced the infection. Why? Because they're caused by antibiotic use. That is it. This is not complicated. Yes, I went to medical school, but guess what? You can grasp this too. You don't need to go to medical school. Very straightforward. So, who should be your donor? And this is very interesting. What they found through research is that the donor does not necessarily have to be related to the recipient. Now, there are some touchy-feely doctors out there. This is not me. Other doctors talking. They have said that someone who lives in the same house, for example, is generally the best candidate because they have a bacterial population in their gut that responds to environmental situations and creates health. And so you want to get a donor that's going to have stuff in their gut that's going to be helpful to you. And, of course, donors are cautioned that their health insurance may not cover the cost of the screening test, which may amount to several hundred dollars. Well, if the tests are not necessary anymore, you can still go there. Yeah. Because there's been no incidence of infection or disease being transmitted as a result of the transplant. So how could a test possibly be necessary? How could an HIV test be necessary if HIV has never been transmitted from fecal transplant? How could a hepatitis A, B, C, D, E, F, or G test be necessary if none of those diseases have ever been transmitted through a fecal transplant? Are you getting the drift here? So this is what we're up against. So they're asking you, the patient, the gullible patient, the mark, to pay $1,200 for an antibiotic test, $500 for test, and then another $1,000 or two to stay overnight in the hospital. And when the whole thing is all said and done, then in order to receive 1 ounce of feces, you have basically parted with anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000. And what do they say? This is a bargain. This is a major steal. This is a major deal. I mean, 1 ounce of feces for anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000. Are you kidding, man? Buy this stuff. Get all you can. Why? Because there's an FDA approved solution. It's called Ecoxymicin. Or Dificid. Dificid, I can pronounce easy. Dificid, of course, is a takeoff of the C. difficile, which is the infection design tree. This is a new antibiotic that costs, get this, $462,000. I'm rounding that down, $462,000 per year. Now, when I saw that price, a drug that sells is $462,000 a year. Alarm bells are off. What does that mean? That means that this drug is likely an orphan drug. And I went online, and sure enough, Dificid has approved FDA orphan status. Those of you who watch, listen to the radio show, saw the FDA episode on orphan drugs. Guess what this means? If it's an orphan drug, that means the FDA has agreed to assist with their marketing, to squash all competition, not approve anything even similar that might compete with them. So, in 2011, FDA agreed and granted orphan status this drug. Now, orphan status gives this drug 7 years of exclusive non-compete marketing status. That means no other drug may compete with this drug. And so, by declaring you're approved a drug, under the jurisdiction of the FDA, the FDA then, under the orphan drug status law, has an obligation to squash, restrict, and limit your use and distribution of your FH, or anyone else's FH, for that matter, because it competes with this drug, which was granted orphan status. How interesting. This is just, it's really too good to, it's even too good to, you can't make this stuff up. It's just amazingly atrocious. So, the FDA moved to regulate fecal transplants, and this was in May 2013, and what the FDA is saying is, FDA has made it clear it regards fecal medical transplant as a biological product and a drug that requires regulation. According to current federal law, A product intended for such use would be an investigational new drug for which an investigational new drug application must be submitted. And this application is intended to assure that subjects are not exposed to unreasonable risk. And I can tell you, filing an investigational new drug application is really burdensome. And what the FDA is saying is each and every patient, before the patient is offered this treatment option, the doctor has to complete such a form, send it to the FDA, and receive approval from the FDA to do this because it's investigational and it's a new drug. How the SH coming out your bumhole could be a new drug when it's still coming out your bottom end for how long now is, it escapes me. At any rate. And then, so the FDA is saying that, as I said, it has to review this application before treatment can begin. This can delay treatment for days, weeks, months. Now, criticism of the FDA decisions come swiftly. According to Mr. Allen, at an FDA public workshop in early May, some participants expressed concerns about the administrative aspect of submitting an IND. That's the administrative aspect. No one is questioning the authority. No one is questioning the authority of the guards to take possession of your stage without your consent. I mean, that's like them legislating what you do with your exhalator. I mean, sure, that's going to calm down the road, I'm just saying. It's pretty burdensome. So, and this particular article, they say 25,000 patients per year die of C. difficile infection in the United States. And the bibliography, each one of them said, you can die from C. difficile, or you might die 20 years from now from a disease you might contract from a fecal transplant, which would most of them answer. Now, they did not recommend this drug that they approved, difficile, did not go through, I'm sure, 20 years of prospective observation and analysis. But they want to suggest an obviously effective therapy to that level of treatment. Now, the Scientific American says the FDA, they published an article in June 2013, FDA comes to grips with fecal transplant. Efforts are underway to standardize fecal transplant, which helps reestablish healthy microbe populations in the gut of patients. They want to standardize fecal transplant, even though it's been proven that as long as the fecal transplant comes from somebody who's healthy, then it has a 90 to 100% effectiveness rate. Excuse me? Why don't you go standardize those other medications that are not so effective and see if you can't make them more effective? It seems to me standardizing fecal transplants is only going to make them less effective. I mean, how much more effective can you get than 100%? Well, guess what? We have a willing individual willing to participate in the FDA's madness. And this doctor has created synthetic poo. He has synthetic poo on the market now. Synthetic poo. We have synthetic food already. It's called genetically modified food. But here, instead of calling it genetically modified food, it's going to be said about GMO, they're calling it synthetic poo. I respect that. Okay. We can handle synonyms. So it's the University of Kingston in Canada, one of the first prototypes of synthetic stool. A mixture of 33 microbes individually isolated from the feces of a healthy donor and then recombined. And from the microbe mix, what they do is they take this, they make a slurry out of it, they dehydrate it into a powder, and they push it into some tablets. So in January, Petrol and her colleagues published results showing that the slurry of microbes called repopulate, for the marketing guys help saying that, could be used in fecal transplants and they cured two people of life-threatening Clostridium difficile. Of course, they're going to enroll 30 people in a clinical trial. So the FDA is going to accept 30 people in a clinical trial, data from this, to okay the sale of synthetic poo, and they don't want you to use your real poo. Okay. Now, someone else did a study of 77 patients from 5 centers around the country, that would be the United States, I imagine, and showed the effectiveness of fecal medical transplant be 91 to 98% for achieving either a primary or secondary cure. In other words, either using it first off or using it after the person failed antibiotics, that would be a secondary cure. So this study suggests that fecal medical transplant may be an effective treatment for recalcitrant or relapsing clostridiosis. Give me a break, man. You've cured 98% of 77 patients, and it suggests that it may be effective? Well, if that's only a suggestion of effectiveness, we need to shut down all the drug companies right now, because the medicines presently on the market don't have anywhere near that suggestion of effectiveness. But this is the standard that the FDA is working with. And so we have a cure here, side effect rate of less than 5%. They did mention that some people, once their Clostridium difficile was cured, went on to get autoimmune diseases. But it's not clear if the autoimmune disease is a remaining deficiency of the immune system, or if it was caused by the fecal transplant, or it could be cured by yet another fecal transplant from a different healthy donor. Anyway, do-it-yourself cost is about $50. Poop, I'm going to guess, is free. You can talk one of your friends into lending you your poop. The next thing you have to buy is an enema bag. I'm lending $20. And a half liter of normal saline, depending on which way you go, you might spend $5 or $10. And, of course, some toilet time. And that's really what it's going to cost you to do your own fecal transplant. Now, the donor. The donor cannot be constipated. Right? Take your Bechdel test. Recipient must empty the colon and intestines. Another case for vitality test. Or they can do, in studies they use magnesium citrate. Or they do a simple water enema to clear the intestines beforehand. I personally would not recommend castor oil because it's oil-based, and we're doing a water-based transplant. We don't want any oil in the intestines that might interfere with the absorption or activity of the fecal transplant. Just my particular observation. So, now, if you pay the doctor several $1,000, what is he going to do? He's going to take a tube, pass it through your nose, down the back of your throat, into your stomach, and as far into your small intestine as he can get. He's going to get a syringe, and he's going to mix 20 grams of poo with 500 cc, we'll call it 500 grams, of salt water, and he's going to squirt it into your nose little bit by little bit. He'll probably have the nurse do it, little bit by little bit. And over a period of several hours, you will get your fecal transplant, is what this is called. The other thing, doctor, now this has many complications, obviously the doctor can put a tube in your lungs instead of your intestines. There's all kinds of problems that can arise. You can have erosion and disruption of your nasal passages and bleeding. But compared to dying of C. difficile, these complications are minor, but they are still more severe than had you done it yourself at home. What's the other way to do? Well, the doctor can do a full bore colonoscopy. That means they sedate you, and they take this huge snake of a tube, put it up your butt, thread it through your colon, up your descending, across your transverse, down your ascending, and then they deposit the full 500 cc of poo plus salt water at that point. That means the junction of the big intestine and the junction of the small and large intestine, and then boom. You have a 90% cure rate. So this is what's the do-it-yourself method? The do-it-yourself method is you find a friend. So this is a friend who's healthy. And I think your definition of healthy is probably much stricter than the FDA definition of healthy. The FDA definition of healthy is just that the person hasn't got any kind of chronic disease, but you can probably be a little fussier than that. Instead of no antibiotics in 90 days, maybe no antibiotics in the past 2 years. Maybe you even might want to say no immunization. And you can set your own standards. And I'd say set them as high as you can, sure. So you've got this individual, this friend of yours, is very healthy. They have no medical problems. They're taking no medications. They've had no antibiotics for at least 90 days. You can set your standards higher, like I said, a year, 2 years, whatever. And so basically we're talking about an ounce. Be generous, 30 grams into your friendly part with it. And you mix this up, use your blender if you want to, with 500 cc's of salt water, put it through a strainer. You don't need the big bits. And you can put it through an Enema bag. And they do have high Enema bags, but I don't want to do that because it's just a lot of work. And you lay on your left side, let the stuff flow in, slowly, 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 because you want the colon to accommodate. Now, what you do then, once you get in the whole 500 cc's, which should be no problem, you elevate your butt in the air and your head is down on the ground. This creates gravity, and the slurry will then slide to the top part of your stomach. Then you're going to massage your transverse colon, pushing the stuff backwards towards the right, and then you're going to put your butt in the air, turn over towards your right, and now you've got this 500 cc's over in your right upper quadrant of your abdomen, and then you massage it down to the fecum, which is its final resting place, and that's where you want the quantum to be populated. Takes about an hour. Takes about an hour at least to do this, because you have to be patient. But the problem is, even though there's no indication that there's a need to restrict the use of natural food in any way, any regulation at this point can only be the detriment of those with Clostridium difficile infection and to the benefit of companies that possess inferior solutions for the whopping sum of $467,000 per patient per year. And this is unconscionable. We have a couple of questions, so let me take a couple of questions here. Let's see. Hi, I'm here. Hello?
Hello?
Yes? Did you have a question?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Dr. Daniels, I've been taking Vitality Caps for a little bit, and I've got this translucent and mucusy stuff coming out. Do you know what that is?
Yes. That is a deeper cleaning slime stuff, and so that means that you're getting great results. Usually
okay,
people have to do lots of enemas and stuff to get that stuff out. So it's a slimy, mucusy, yellowish tan stuff.
Right. It just looks like skin coming off my stomach or something.
Well, the skin is not translucent. The skin would be
it's
solid.
Mixed. Oh yeah, it's mixed in with the poo. I mean, you know, it's just I can break the poo down, and this translucent mucusy stuff is all over it.
Yeah, those are toxins coming out. And so
You should be feeling pretty good.
How are you feeling?
Well, not too bad. I feel pretty good. I'm going to do the turpentine here, but I just want to make sure I get enough. It seems like when I don't take the Vitality Caps, I stop pooing.
Right.
So I don't
keep
know
taking
if that's...
them. No, keep taking them, and then as you clean out and as the turpentine reverses what's going on in your body, then you're
mm-hmm.
going to recover your body's functions. You know...
Right.
It's part of it's where you are right now, and so you just have to, as you change your diet, as you get a little more exercise, which is like walking, working strenuous, and as
right.
you get more fluids, then your bowels are going to change.
Oh, okay.
And be more,
all right.
be more independent.
I just wanted to make sure that wasn't a concern, something going on in there.
No, yeah, something is going on. There's something good.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right,
thanks
so much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Okay. Figure out my button here. Okay, we have another question. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Can
you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay, my question is in regard to the turpentine protocol. I've got a few about
mm-hmm.
it. You mentioned in the information that you're not supposed to take oil, and I wondered, is Can you take one called Udo's oil, U-D-O-S? It's made from organic flaxseed oil, sesame seed oil, and sunflower oil. Can you take that while you're taking the turpentine? You know, it's part of nutritional benefits.
Probably you're better off taking either soaked flaxseed or soaked chia seed. And that way you're going to get your omega-3, and then your body is going to supply the other oils.
So, okay, and so you're not supposed to
take...
And your
other foods. So, like,
6 months or a year where you're just using it constantly, you know what I mean, like you're saying. And so you shouldn't be taking any kind of oil, not even, like, organic olive oil, you know, just because the benefits of having some oil in your diet.
Well, the oil's coming from your omega-3 sources, which would be your chia seed and your flaxseed. So what you're looking at, what you're asking me about is refined oil. There's a lot of problems with refined oils, whether Udo's or anyone else's. And so you're better off without them. Now, once you get going with it, with the turpentine, you're feeling good, things are going great, you may decide you want to add these oils back that you took out, and then see how it goes.
Okay, so you've heard of this Udo's oil because it's organic,
yes,
and it's
I
a
have.
Doctor,
yes, I
a PhD, I was a PhD that created it. And so even that, not a good one to use for when you're doing this turpentine protocol.
The whole problem with the candida is refined foods. And so if you have a refined oil, no matter how organic, no matter how whatever, it's part of the problem. And so by soaking the chia seed, you're going to get the oil, but in an unrefined state. So you're still going to get your oil, but you're going to get them in the context of a whole food.
Okay, so if you soak the dark brown flaxseed and like overnight or 24 hours and then blend it in the blender type thing. I don't know if I can handle the fiber part of that. I can handle chia. Right now with the...
Just do chia. They're equivalent. Just do chia.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're equivalent. Okay.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
And what else? Oh, and is it okay, like things that I eat, like, it's okay to use, you know, you soak it really. I soak my seeds before I cook them on low heat. Like buckwheat, can you eat buckwheat after it's been soaked for 24 hours in the fridge and then cooked on low heat? Is that an okay thing to eat?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's okay. The diet is actually pretty flexible. But the problem is you need to give your immune system a wake-up call. Say, hey, I'm helping you out here. I'm cutting off the refined stuff. I'm making it easy for you. Wants you to get up off your dub and get some work done. And your immune system will say, oh, okay. And so you need to make enough changes to unburden your immune system, take away all these processed foods that didn't exist, you know, before we started processing, and just go back to eating whole foods. So buckwheat, a whole food, you know, roast it, boil it, no problem.
Okay. I've been for like 4.5 to almost 5 years just eating, you know, like, I like with the buckwheat, you soak it, the quinoa, brown rice, you soak it, and then you cook it on low heat, and then I blend it in the blender and add water, you know, purified water, and then drink it that way. And then, like, for the salad part, I'll blend it, like, you know, if you're putting lots of organic greens, spring greens, you know, the small, tender leaves,
yeah.
Blend that, and then there's, like, a pound and a half bag of stuff you can buy at Costco that's kale, spinach, and chard, and then, you know, steam that, and that's a nice kind of a green to have. Is it okay to, you know, and then, like, your fruit. So I've been eating a more pure diet than probably a lot of people instead of the processed stuff. I have just recently been experimenting with making my own gluten-free pancakes and come up with my own little recipe.
Now, a lot of people go through a tremendous amount of trouble to take regular food and process it. I think that if you can just take the whole grain, you know, if you want to roast it and then cook it, that's fine. And then just stop right there. You don't need to go through the blending and the water and all the other stuff. And then when it comes to buying these bagged things at Costco, you know, if you read into really what's going on with that stuff, they even call it greenwashing. That's how I'll say how bad it is, but that's how bad it is. They call it greenwashing. So if you're buying bagged organic vegetables, and that's the best you can do, then that's fine. Do that. But I would say if you really want to go the next step, the most reasonable place to put your effort is to look in your backyard and eat whatever is edible this time of year. This is June, and almost every place in the United States in June, there's something spontaneously growing in the backyard that you would have killed because you probably weed, but you can eat it, and then it'll work out a lot better for you. I have one more question. Okay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Daniels. I have a question. Well, I have two questions, but the first question, I have a friend who has been diagnosed with breast cancer, and she went through the chemo, and they had gotten rid of, or the tumor had gone, and I guess they had moved the excess and, you know, just did like, I guess, I don't know what it's called when they just take the stuff out of it, but they don't remove the breast. And yeah. So now she's on all these extra drugs, and I'm trying to talk her out of it, but now she said that they suspect that it's gone to her, into her head, and they want to do three different spinal things. They've already done one and in her back, and they want to do another one like this Friday, and then they want to do one more, and I'm just trying to convince her that she, you know, there is, it's just too much. But my thing is, for her, after she comes off of it and allows them to do all of this, what kind of protocol would you suggest for her to get her health back?
She can just send an email to support at vitalitycapsules.com. And what I would do then is just do a discovery session with her and talk with her about what's really going on and go from there and see, you know, kind of where she's at, what she's interested in doing, and kind of lay out for her what I feel would be some reasonable choices for her. I think that would be the best way to go. I mean, I don't believe in having people do anything they don't want to do. So I think the thing to do would be just to, you know, let her know you heard this doctor on the radio, and she'll say, oh, my God, I'm a doctor on the radio. But let her know you heard this doctor on the radio. And she can send an email to support at vitalitycapsules.com, and she can kind of take it from there.
Okay, great. Another friend's father had a stroke recently, and I had learned about table salt as opposed to sea salt, and that table salt is really bad for you, but sea salt is better. After having had a stroke, maybe, you know, should you, you know, he change his salt, kind of salt that he uses, or is that going to, you know, maybe keep him from having another stroke?
No, it's not going to. It's not going to substantially impact his risk of a second stroke. What will substantially, there's two things that will substantially impact his risk of another stroke. One is taking a look at drugs he's taken and stopping all the drugs that cause stroke. That's number one. And number two, increasing his hydration. The number one cause of stroke is dehydration. In other words, forgot to drink a glass of water at that point. Basically, that is the number one cause of stroke, and that's why really anyone can get a stroke. So, again, for him, he can just send an email to support at vitalitycapsules.com, and that would, and then we could have a conversation about that. Now, discovery sessions used to be free. They're no longer free. They're $149, but, you know, that's his choice whether he wants to do one or not.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm the only one that listens to you, but I'm going to try and talk them into it so that they can go the other way instead of the pharmaceutical way.
Yeah, you know, everyone gets one life to live. And the way I figure it is, the price for me being able to live my life the way I want to is to extend that same courtesy to other people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I appreciate you, Doctor. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye.
Okay, well, we've got about 3 minutes left, and I can tell you what I think about this SH stuff. I think this is really serious because when you get the FDA involved, they can decide who can donate, who can receive. They can then decide that your FH is a regulated drug, which means They can now put surveillance cameras in your kitchen, your bathroom, and your bedroom, all places where the crime of possession and distribution of your SH, this controlled substance, might take place. And then this gives police authorities and stuff, SWAT teams here entering your home to police your SH. To protect what? A multi-billion dollar industry that's charging people $467,000 per person per year for less effective therapy than your own SH. And this is a serious issue. And companies, as I said, are placing synthetic SH on the market as we speak. And how can they sell it for $2,400 per ounce if people like you are out there giving away your SH for free? So that's where things are going. And if you don't own your own SH, it just makes you a slave, a real serious slave. This is absolutely awful. It's atrocious. And so I just had to do this show because you need to take charge of your own SH in order to restore your health. You cannot continue to flush your SH down the toilet. You've got to find at least some way to recycle this stuff into some kind of garden or some kind of growing situation where it can fertilize plants for your health instead of contaminating the water that you drink and contaminating the waterways in the ocean. Further, you need to be a resource. Be healthy yourself and be a resource to your friends. You can share your SH. And if you want to sell it, why, so much the better. I mean, after all, your competition is $467,000 a year. I'm sure if you had a heart-to-heart talk with your friends and family, they would agree to assist you and support you in almost any way if you would donate your SH. So, this is Dr. Daniels signing off saying, get control of your SH. As I said, get your SH in order. All right. That is it, and we will see you again next week.